Good day, and welcome to the Northeast Woman in Public Finance teleconference. You spoke, we listened. Your career questions answered. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. During or after today's presentation, there will be opportunities to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your touchtone phone. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. Please also note, this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Ms. Diane Brozen. Ms. Brozen, the floor is yours, ma'am.
Thank you, Michael. Welcome, panel and call-in participants, to the You Spoke, We Listened, Your Career Questions Answered, with respect to the Mentoring Committee at Northeast Women in Public Finance. I want to thank the Northeast Women in Public Finance, as well as the Mentoring Committee members, for making the call possible. I also want to thank Fitch Ratings for hosting the teleconference at its offices and providing the teleconference capability to hold the call. With that, I'm going to turn it over to our three distinguished panel members today to introduce themselves and give a brief synopsis of their careers. And I will turn it over to Elaine Brennan.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. This is Elaine Brennan. I joined the municipal bond business in 1979. The first third or so of my career spent as the manager of the short-term trading and sales department at Chemical Bank. In 1993, after several forks in the road, that, as we're going to talk about later, I switched career paths and took a position at Rose Mountain Cross, where I'm still employed, thankfully. I've been there since, I guess I said, 93. The first part of my career there was also in the trading and underwriting department short term. And then I transitioned into public finance about a little over 10 years ago. And my responsibilities basically include covering New York State, the larger issuers in New York State, as well as local financings, mainly refundings for states and local governments. I guess we'll go next.
Turn it up to Jesselyn Morrow.
Thank you, Diane. My name is Jesselyn Morrow, and I am the head of U.S. Public Finance for Fitch Ratings. And I took a bit of a windy path to get here, but I started in undergraduate as a vocal performance major and quickly realized I was going to end up waiting tables or teaching, neither of which really suited my needs or interests. So I switched over to public administration undergrad, and then through that went to the Maxwell School at Syracuse and got my MPA. And Fitch recruited me from the Maxwell School 18 years ago, and I've been at Fitch ever since. I started out doing solid waste analysis, and then I went to the local government ratings group, became the Northeast Regional Manager for Local Government Ratings, and then became the head of operations right after the fiscal crisis, after I had went back and forth and had two babies back to back. Came back and became the head of operations to sort of help absorb the regulations into the rating flow, and then was co-managing the local government group, and managed the local government group, and then 2 years ago was promoted to head of U.S. Public Finance.
Thank you, Jesselyn, and now I'll turn it over to Mimi Jenkins.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mimi Jenkins. My career is also not a straight line. I started out as an undergrad majoring in math at SUNY Buffalo, and spent a lot of the time between then and starting out at Wagner in public finance just working at various nonprofits. When I started at Wagner in 2003, I had secured a job as a law clerk at a law firm and worked there full-time and went to school part-time and decided to commit to public finance. And for me, the goal was to really marry the quantitative skills with a public finance focus, and I did that along the way. I interned with the New York City OMB and various other nonprofits in graduate school and subsequently started my career path at a rating agency at Moody's Investors Service. I was at Moody's for 5 years and then I transitioned over to the buy side. I've been at AllianceBernstein currently for the last 7 years. I currently cover a lot of high yield credit and various state and local private higher ed, and I've covered a number of sectors during that period of time.
Thank you, Nini. And with that, I think we'll start with our first question that I'm going to pose to the panelists. And the first question is the following. Robert Frost's famous poem, The Road Not Taken, is about choice, how one decision can change a person's life. The speaker chose one path over another, and that, he said, quote, has made all the difference. Can each of you share with us your personal road not taken and how it affected your life and career? And I think we'll start with Jesselyn.
Okay. Thank you, Diane. My answer is relatively short, but may be helpful to people on the call. Again, I've spent my total career at Fitch, so the road not taken for me was deciding to continue to stay at Fitch during a few different forks in my career path over the years. And I had an opportunity, a few opportunities along the way to pursue opportunities outside of Fitch for higher compensation in that moment. And each time I decided to stay, and I can tell you from my own story and my own personal experience, it was absolutely the right choice. And there were a lot of decisions. We'll talk about decision making later, but compensation is important and for a lot of different reasons, and obviously people value different things. But for me, weighing the total picture at each one of those forks, I decided to stay at Fitch, and that was what was best for me, and I'm glad I did it.
Okay, next we'll have thoughts from Nini.
I think that there have been a number of forks along the way in my career, and I think that I developed a lot of those skills in terms of making that decision as those forks occur, but I sort of want to highlight one of my very earliest decision-making paths. And I am the child of two immigrant parents, and so much like other immigrants, still share some thoughts. I started college as a pre-med major, and it took a lot of courage to talk through things with my family and friends, and really sort of adhere to what I truly believed in and switch over to math. And so every time I think about my career path not chosen, I think, okay, well, what are the other math majors doing and how is it different? And I'm very confident that the career path that I chose was the one that was right for me. It was challenging for me. And I'd be missing part of myself if I'd gone strictly quantitative.
Thank you, Nini. Elaine?
Well, now I was going to answer differently, but I have to admit, being a math major and not being an actuary was a very good career choice for me, because that's where they pigeonhole you when you're a math major. You're either going to be an actuary or you're going to be a teacher. And I took my first interview with an actuary. I said, this is not for me. I went into insurance, and 4 years later, I joined the bond business. So my real fork then, joining Chemical Bank in 1979, hired for sales, but filled in for a trader, assistant, became a note trader, left for a year, came back to run the note department, which was interesting because, sometimes leaving for a year and the boss that trained me wanted me to replace him as he got promoted, so that was kind of lucky, too. I had a great career there from 79 to 93. It was apparent to me in the early 90s, when you work for a big firm, and I know most of us have, there are great years and there are bad years. And I'm not talking about the market. I'm talking about depends on who your current manager is. And at least that was my experience. I had several managers. One year I would be in all the management meetings. The next year I wouldn't know about the management meetings. And it was kind of a, 1 year. So at a certain point at Chemical, I realized that I wasn't happy. And the boss who hired me twice at Chemical, who's now my boss at Roosevelt & Cross, had left already, and I was having dinner with him, and he said, how would you like to interview Roosevelt & Cross and start a short-term department? And it was a scary thing to do, because here I am leaving a very big bank, and I was running the short-term department. I was making very good money, So it was a risk. They closed the bond department back a year later, so I guess it worked out okay. So that was the fork in my road, and I think I chose wisely. So, but the point is, don't ever look back. You make your choice, and if it isn't the right choice, like even at Roosevelt Cross, I switched departments at some point because it turned out there were some things in the department I was in that weren't clicking. So don't ever look back. Just look forward. So.
Thank you, Elaine. Our second question is the following. People say that hindsight is always 20/20. Things are obvious today that were not obvious at the outset. Today, one is able to evaluate past choices more clearly than at the time of the choice. So my question to each of you is, if you could have given yourself one piece of advice at the beginning of your career, given what you know now and didn't back then, what would it have been? And we'll start with Nini.
You know, strangely enough, this is a question that I've asked myself before, and so it's not more than one piece of advice, but it's been consistent, and it works for my career, it works for my personal life as well. And is I would tell my younger self to pursue your goals with diligence and focus, but make sure to maintain a really strong support system because things will always go off track and unanticipated things will happen. And it is that support system that helps you rebound, refocus, and move on.
Thank you, Nini. And next we will go to Jacqueline.
Okay. When I was a rookie, I tended to think that most people thought like I did, which of course is ridiculous now after you have some experience, but that is where I started. And I would, if I could go back, I would really sit myself down and make myself understand that people come from all different backgrounds and perspectives and experiences, either really big experiences that shape their whole life or the experience they had that morning, getting on the train or getting in an argument with somebody. So people bring so many different things, both positive and negative, to the table. And I would tell myself, you know, really try and think about that and try and understand what motivates people, the individual people that you're working with, so that you can better support the team, better lead the team, better identify where there might be shortfalls, you know, just how you manage your work and you manage the people around you. You don't actually have to be a manager to manage people, right? We manage each other all the time as members of a team. So that would be my first piece of advice. Just really think about the fact that people are coming at the problem and the issue from all different perspectives. My second point, sounds so odd to myself, would be don't jump so quickly. I tend to move very fast, and I've learned to tame that over the years. But you really, when a problem presents itself, or even an opportunity for that matter, really just take a breath and really think about the facts. Think about the facts. Try and take the emotion out of it. Think about the facts, and then just land on an informed decision, and as Elaine said, move on.
Thank you, Jessalyn. Elaine.
I guess the one piece of advice, looking back, and I can kind of give you a specific example, I learned very thoroughly my job as manager of short-term trading at Chemical Bank. I learned all about, I think I was an excellent trader. I think I was an excellent manager. I think I worked well with my sales force. I helped sign accounts. But I had opportunities to learn more than what was my job. I was young, I was energetic. I would go, for example, we did the commercial paper program for the state of Tennessee, so I would go with the bankers to the state of Tennessee and go to meetings, but I only really concerned myself with explaining how I priced the commercial paper. I didn't really worry about it. And one time, I got stuck in a two-hour, three-hour document session meeting, and I said to the banker, what are you doing to me here? You know, this is so boring. And now look what I do for a living. I'm a public finance banker, and I wish I had back then learned more about the jobs I didn't have to do, but that were peripheral to what I did. I think it would have made me more well-rounded. And I still ended up learning it 30 years later, but I could have taken some advantages back then to to really find out what all those people who would take me on their presentations really did when they went back in their office. So soak up all you can, learn all you can, even though you don't plan on being a credit analyst, maybe learn about what the criteria are for credit ratings for whatever, you know, sector you might be interested in. All the peripheral jobs that we have, we could all learn from each other, and we can learn from the people we work with. So that's what I would do.
Thanks, Elaine. The next subject is challenges that everyone faces throughout their career. You all face new challenges as your career has evolved over the years. When you were deciding what challenges to take on, or for that matter, those not to take on, what did each of you consider in making your decisions and choices? And Elaine, let's start with you this time.
I think that question to me is a bit of an overlap to what I just answered, so I don't want to be repetitive, but I think the whole idea of keeping your growth spectrum wide, having made a career change, I would say pretty late in life, you know, 10 years ago, even though it's the same product, it's a big difference from trading to banking. And I think what made me want to do it is I was a little bored with what I was doing. I was a lot bored with what I was doing. It became very routine and very rote, and I think if you get yourself in a situation where you stop learning, some people like that, they're very comfortable with that, I'm not. I just feel like when your learning curve is like a straight line, you know, I'm using my hands, I know you can't see me, but like a parallel line instead of as a math major, I should know what this is, you know, an upward sloping line, then you have to think about, well, maybe it's time for me to move on and do something different. So.
Thanks, Elaine. And Jesselyn.
When I've been dealing with thinking about taking on new challenges in my career, for me, it always starts with what is non-negotiable for me personally. You know, and that's the only person who can answer that is every single individual. And for me, that was maintaining some work-life balance, whatever that means, again, for you. That was non-negotiable to me. That was number one, even before I had kids. I was, you know, I'd never wanted, you know, really great bond reader on my gravestone. I think about what's non-negotiable, and that was the main one. And then, of course, there's a list of things after that that may be in priority order as well. But it kind of takes the fear out of making those decisions if you just kind of just start with that. Okay, no matter what, I want to maintain my work-life balance, you know, and it's not perfect all day, every day, but overall. And then from that point, I really painstakingly try to make very detailed decisions. So if you say, okay, if I go choose path A, that means that this is going to happen next. Then what's going to happen right after that is this other thing. And then you really take that out as forward and as detailed as you possibly can. So that means, like, if, for example, if I'm going to take another role, okay, that means Monday morning, I'm going to have to wake up a little earlier, commute in, you know, just really painstaking details associated with each path. And when you start to do that and then you ground yourself, I'm talking about myself, but when I ground myself back to, okay, but I want to maintain the balance, for me, that was number one, the decision trees get shorter. You can see the path a little more clearly. So that's my main thing to consider. And then from a total professional perspective, who am I going to be working for and with? That is key, right? We spend a ton of time at work, and if I didn't believe that the people were going to be supportive or that specifically my manager or leader was going to be supportive, that was an important part of my choice as well.
Nini, what do you think?
I think the only thing, I think those are great responses. The only thing I would add is kind of a bridge between the two. You know, as Elaine said, I am focused on a straight upward path on my career. And so there are key critical questions that I ask before I decide to do the detailed research that Jesselyn just laid out. And it is, you know, will I learn new things? Will I expand my reach? And will I develop new branches on my networking tree? And if I can triage the opportunity that way, After that, there are a whole host of very personal considerations that drive, well, yes, I would take this position, but only if it's this way. It's important to think about not just the opportunity that's presented to you, but also how they might change it so that it's better for you personally. And I think about that understanding the entire finance industry struggles in that, you know, the concentration of women at senior levels and being involved with policymaking doesn't necessarily specifically have me in mind when those rules were developed. And so you might find that there is some give that will make your ability to execute that opportunity easier than what specifically they presented to you.
Thank you. All right. Our next discussion point is many factors greatly influence the direction of one's career over the years. Can each of you share with us the factors that had the most impact on your career? For example, what people in your professional life influenced you and guided you as you made those fork in the road decisions that we discussed earlier? And this time, let's start with Nini.
I think this is where I go to my mentors. I think that it's really important to recognize that you may not have all the pieces and considerations. And so I think very much I look to individuals who've experienced something similar or know someone to help me make a really, really good decision about what to do when these move forward.
Hey, Elaine. Okay. Elaine doesn't have anything to add, so we will turn to Jesslyn for her comments and thoughts.
Thank you. I've been, the first person I turned to was my husband. He's been my partner for a long time throughout my entire career, and he also has his own career, so it's an interesting back and forth on just getting his perspective, and obviously he knows me very well, so it's been helpful. And the mentors, 100%, and specifically, I've tried my best to develop relationships, mentor personal relationships with people who I know will have a different point of view than me, and that goes back to just trying to really analyze all different aspects of the decision and thinking about perspectives. And I have a couple of mentors right now, and one of them, no matter what, even if I try to think about what they're going to say, they always come up with something different, which is so valuable to me. We just think differently, and that's super helpful. And I would just say that, you know, I think some people see asking for help as a sign of weakness, and I couldn't disagree with that anymore. I believe that it's a total sign of strength to understand what your own value and strengths are and what your blind spots and weaknesses might be, and then seek out other people that can help fill those gaps.
Meaning, I think that's a really great point. And I'm as you were speaking, I was remembering a conversation I had with one mentor when I wanted to pursue something, and she went, no, somebody's been talking about getting you to do this. So, like, it was just, I had no idea that I was part of another conversation for another opportunity that I would have wanted more. And if I hadn't sought her feedback, I would have latched on to the first opportunity and lost the ability to do the other.
Thank you, Nini. Well, with that, I think we'll turn it over to Michael, our operator, to see if we have any questions on the phone.
Thank you, madam. As a reminder to our guests, to ask a question, you can press star, then one on your touchtone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. If any kind of question has been addressed and you'd like to withdraw your question, please press star, then two. Again, it is star, then one to ask a question. At this time, we'll just pause momentarily to assemble our roster.
While we're waiting for questions, we'll turn to a couple of questions that were submitted before this call by participants on the call. And the first one I'm going to pose to Jesslyn. And it kind of follows up on what we were just discussing in terms of your making decisions in your career. How do you deal effectively with self-doubt and second-guessing yourself and continue on when you have severe self-doubts?
So, again, it does link to what we were saying, but I would just, for me personally, I can't be a solo operator, even though there are times when you feel alone in your personal and professional lives. You never really are, and it's up to you to seek guidance out from other people. And I would just say to be really self-aware. I mean, sincerely, we all have unique strengths, unique value to bring to any situation. So really try and, you know, think about what those things are. Think about what you're really good at. Think about what comes completely naturally to you. You know, think when you're in a conversation with somebody and somebody expresses the way they think, and you might say to yourself, gosh, I would never think like that. Okay, why? Think about what you're really good at. And then, again, what your weaknesses are, and really, you know, try and gather the facts that you need in order to make your decision. That often means collaborating with others. And I would say, you know, just show that you're ultimately interested in making informed decisions and helping others make informed decisions. And I believe that that's kind of the best that you can do.
Thank you, Jocelyn. Nina or Elaine, do you have anything to add?
I would just kind of, in support of what Jocelyn said, no one is absolutely excellent at every facet of a job. So you do have to depend on other people. And I think if you can recognize what you do the best, say there's five tasks that complete a job that you have to do and you're working with one or two other people, and you know you're the best at reviewing a contract or, you know, going on a site visit or, you know, all the different tasks that may be involved, you take the lead on that. If you find someone in your group or your team that seems to be a little bit better in another task, you help them, but you say, well, why don't you take the lead on that? And I think that also helps you be a teamwork and be assertive and show your strength.
Nini, do you have anything to add?
So there are a couple of things that I do. And a lot of people are going to make fun of me, and they're going to look at me differently now, but I think it's a really great tip, so I am happy to share. So I borrow other people's confidence. Sometimes when I have self-doubt, I think of someone that I look up to, and I say, well, what would Allison Martier do in this situation? Or what would Jocelyn Morrow do in this situation? How would she behave? Like, I'm going to, you know, try and become that confident person that I might look up to. And it's important because I suffer from what I think a lot of people on the floor, phone, and even in this room will think about. It's this imposter syndrome that we have sometimes when we have really high expectations for how someone fulfills the job in that role and much higher than other people might have for themselves. And sometimes I look, you know, that other guy on my team, he would not be putting himself through the ringer for this. He would do it completely differently. But, you know, when you demand excellence from yourself, often you'll find that you are harder on yourself than other people are. And so when I get into that position, I borrow other people's confidence. I borrow their resources. I check in with people. I practice. All of it gets me, hopefully, to a good outcome, but I do not always have it, I promise you. Sometimes inside, I'm shaking like a leaf, but it's more important to push back and feel free to borrow, even if that means going in your closet and pretending to decide what would that other person wear today, whatever you need to absorb that confidence that you need to push past and get things done.
Jocelyn.
Thank you, Nini. That's so great. One other practical tip, which I heard Nini give a few, over-prepare. Like, kill yourself to over-prepare. If it's a specific, like, if you're going, okay, I'm doubtful that I can actually execute this presentation in the best way or meet my own expectations, kill yourself with preparing over and over and over. And by the time you get there, I promise it's going to be not nearly as bad as you think if you really over-prepare.
Doesn't hurt.
And I second what Jessalyn said, having been an over-preparer all my career. Okay, Michael, do we have any questions on the phone?
No, ma'am. We don't have any so far, but if I can, just again, if you'd like to ask a question, it's star then one.
Okay. All right. Well, we have other questions that were submitted. So this one I will pose to Elaine. How do you or have you balanced career aspirations, upward mobility, such as contemplating a potential career change for a higher compensation, with wanting stability and predictability while starting a family?
You know, I really like this question because I like it and I hate it because I think no one would ask a man that question, and that kind of drives me pretty nuts. I'll admit, I'm probably the oldest one in the room and maybe even on the phone. I'm 63 years old. I've worked every day of my life since graduating college, married, have two grown children, and I went out, you've probably seen this question or phrase in a book or even heard it. I went out to one of our networking dinners and someone that was running the dinner basically said, you can't have it all, and I completely disagree with you. Yes, you can have it all. My grown children, I have a grown daughter, grown son, both very successful in their careers, credit their mother as much, if not more, than their father for a strong role model. Of course, having a strong husband and good father helps as well, and not all women have that luxury. But that doesn't mean that you can't choose both. And I think in society today it's a little bit easier than it was when I had my kids because, you know, 4 weeks maternity leave and there was no paternity leave and all that. I would just say don't, as Jessalyn said, you have to make choices. I was in the trading area for the first 20 years of my life, which means I got home, you know, not at 6 o'clock every night, right? You know, now I can be in banking and travel. My kids are out of the house and grown. So you do have to make some choices in terms of your hours and where you work and whom you work for sometimes. Sometimes there are just people that will not recognize you because, or they will just assume that, well, what happens if your child is sick? Or what happens if your child is sick and you're a man? So I find that whole thing frustrating. But if you go through life with an attitude that this is my job and my career and it's equally important to raising my family, managers will notice that. And they will notice that you work. I had one of my first bosses that said that he always loved to hire women because they work three times as hard as men to get to the same place. And in many ways, that's true. The other thing I just would add as an aside, if you're looking for a potential job change, and this isn't always easy to do, and you're going to a company that's pretty well known and you can, that's what's good about this organization. Say you are thinking of applying for a job at Fitch. You can contact Jessalyn or some of the other women in this organization that work there, even if they aren't in the family situation, but they may know somebody. It doesn't hurt to ask. My first job ever, Continental Insurance, I interviewed a woman who was probably a couple of years older than me, and she was going to be working for me. And she asked me, well, how do you like it here? She asked me all these personal questions, and I'm like, first I was like taken aback when I thought, you know what, that's a really good question. How do you like working here? How do they treat you? You know, these are things that you want to know, whether you plan on just working there or whether you have a family or not. I mean, these are good things to know. We should all be happy where we work. So kind of go for a little tangent there, but anybody else want to add in?
Michael, do we have any questions on the line?
No, ma'am. We don't have any questions on the line so far.
Okay, well, this question that was submitted is for Nini. For those of us participating in the Northeast Women in Public Finance Mentor and Mentee Program, can you share with us creative ways for mentors and mentees to stay in touch with each other throughout the year, especially when our careers and our busy personal lives make it difficult to maintain those relationships at times?
Great question. I struggle with this as well sometimes with my mentees. I think on a surface, of course, meeting up at Northeast Women in Public Finance events are helpful, even if you haven't touched base in a while. If there's an event that comes up, sometimes I'll reach out to the mentees or my mentee might reach out to me And just check in and say, hey, do you plan to attend? Let's meet up before or after. Just tack it on. Often if I don't schedule it, it doesn't happen, especially not in advance. The other thing that is really interesting that can work on both ends are you can have internal events where you're open to invite external mentees to your internal events. And so especially, you know, if it's women and women in leadership focused, it can be really meaningful. So I've had mentees come to events at my firm. My mentee once invited, like, got free tickets to a museum, and there's no easier way to sort of have a conversation and get to know each other than find free tickets in to an event or something like a museum where you can just stroll along and talk to each other and get to know each other. So those are some of the sort of go-to touch base ways you can keep in touch. And then, you know, as you get to know someone, sometimes, you know, life events might cause you to get in touch. You know, I had someone that I mentored that happened to work somewhere there where there was a natural disaster, and just touching base. How are you doing? I know you're, you know, I'm wondering about how you're doing, thinking about you because this is somewhere near you where you said you frequent. It can be as quick as that, but it helps sort of maintain the bond between the mentee and the mentor. That's some of the ways that I've seen.
Thank you, Jesselyn or Elaine. Do you have anything to add?
This is Jesselyn. I'll just add that I know we there were some questions about networking when you're shy and it might be difficult to network. And I would just say it's really important to try and find an authentic way to connect with people. Because, you know, in the brash way, oh, it's all who you know, not even about career advancement necessarily, but just trying to sort through all the various questions and challenges that we face every day. And if you're not open to striking up a conversation with people, especially at a formal networking event, you just close yourself off to experiences and points of view that you might find, you know, and I know in my own case, have really help me change direction, like, massively in a lot of ways. And it can be a small connection. It can be one that you sort of see once in a while. But, you know, just encourage people to really find an authentic way to sort of get over your shyness, because the value is tremendous. One more thing on that point, it's not just about who can get me a better job. It's about how do I just make personal connections with people, because at the end of the day, that's what we're doing on this earth, right, is having personal connections with people, and you'll have a richer experience as a result.
I just want to add, I mean, it's really not mentoring, but I recently, as I mentioned, for years I was in trading and now I'm in banking, and it's kind of like a whole different set of people, you know. And I had a really interesting event that I attended. I have a very good friend who is on the buy side, and she moved to the Boston area. And, you know, when we were at Chemical Bank years ago, we were all, there was a few women, we all were pregnant at the same time. We had a lot of connections. At least we commuted together. And she invited me up to her professional cocktail party at the firm she worked at. She's covered by my Boston office. And I ran into like four or five people there, men and women, that I hadn't seen in like 20 to 30 years. And it was just wonderful. And it was just like that, you know, they were on the sales side, you know, in my old career. And it was like we didn't miss a beat, you know. And it wasn't just about business. It was also about how did your life go in the past 20 years since I've seen you. And I just think every opportunity you can get to meet someone, don't do it just because they happen to be in exactly the same line of work you're in or where you want to be. You just never know, you know, what it is about a person that you meet that might just make your day. I don't know. That made my evening that time. So,
thanks, Elaine. Michael, any questions from our participants? I know you're all not that shy out there.
Come on.
Again, that is star then one if you'd like to participate with a question via the phone. That's star then one.
No questions. Wow. For this distinguished group. All right. right, we have a few more that were submitted ahead of time. This one I will address to Jesslyn. How do I effectively maintain and own recognition for my individual work while also playing for the team?
Great question, something I think many of us face every day. First of all, you have to really understand the context of the organization and the group you're working in. So ideally, which is not always true, what's good for you is perfectly aligned with what's good for the team. So it shouldn't be that challenging, but I recognize that it is often depending on the players involved and the culture, and there's a whole host of things that are factors there. So you have to be your own best advocate, and that doesn't mean you're strolling around every day saying, oh, look what I did, guys. Look at how amazing I am, right? That's not the point. You have to find an authentic way to advocate for yourself, and that's where your mentor can be super helpful, right? Like, just have a conversation with your mentor and say, I'm struggling with this particular point. And if you've developed a relationship with them, they know you, they may be able to give you very specific advice on how to navigate that situation. But you have to be your own best advocate, find a way to do that authentically, and obviously know the audience. The last thing I'll say from a practical perspective is that I believe most firms at the either annual review process or some way along the feedback loop with your manager or your team, it's a 360 or however you might do your reviews, most firms provide individual employees an opportunity to do a self-assessment to say, you know, this is what I believe that I accomplished this year. And that is a very tangible tool. And I think I worry that some people sort of leave that to the last minute, and because there's so much going on that you kind of throw a few things together. A tool that I found helpful, I just keep a spreadsheet called accomplishments, and I just, as soon as something good happens, I list it in that spreadsheet. Even if it's tiny, like had a successful conversation with someone I have yet to be able to have a successful conversation with, and that one may not go into my self-assessment, but you just really collect those wins for yourself privately. It's good to go back to when you're having maybe a down day, but also by the time that annual review comes along and it's time to fill in that form, you'll just have a huge menu of things to choose from. And maybe 25 to 50% of that list gets actually in the self-assessment, but you have to really actively manage that and pay attention to it. That's my advice.
Yeni or Elaine, do you have anything to add?
Well, you want to
go? Elaine.
All right. I work at a very small firm, and it's a little different because we don't really have sheets that we fill out for reviews.
Okay.
I mean, I'll get reviewed at year end. It's basically just to tell me what if any bonus I'm going to get, and there'll be a few words, but it's very lax. It's not very like structured like most big companies are. And I've worked for an insurance company, I've worked for a bank, and I've been a supervisor, so I know what that's like. So it's a little bit different when you work for a small firm, but sometimes it's also easier because you can go up to the CEO and say, hey, guess what? Look what I did. And I had this friend once that years ago I had shot a really great golf game, and at the end of the game he was bragging, and I said, Bart, what are you doing? He said, Elaine, when you're driving your car, blow your horn. And I just love that expression. Without bragging, you can make it clear to people what your strengths are. And you know what's important sometimes, you know, as I said, I worked for a very long time, and there were times when people have taken something I've done or somebody I worked with has done and made it theirs, you know, and that still happens. I don't think it happens as much as it used to. So you have to watch out for that, because I've had a person that I work with that would actually repeat something a few hours later that I said as if it was his own idea. So you really got to, you have to blow your own horn without bragging, because you don't want to make it sound like, you know, well, I'm so good and everybody else is bad. But if you're really good at something, or if you discovered something, a problem, a mistake, and fixed it, or then you tell your group, hey, this is what I found out, and guess what happened? I fixed it because of this, this, and this. It's an educational experience, but you're also blowing your own horn. So,
and I'll say that sometimes. Sorry, this is Nini. I'll say that sometimes. Sometimes you'll find that you don't get credit for work that you've done because you're the only one not telling people you did work. And so by default, you seem to be working less than other people, and so I just need to bring great emphasis to what Elaine just said about making sure that people are aware of what you work on. Someone earlier in my career, as they were trying to develop me, once said, if you work on something and no one knows it, it's like you haven't done it at all. It wasn't in my nature to have these conversations where the braggadocious ones are like, I did this, I did that. And so I had to learn over time how to talk about it so that it was more comfortable for me. And so sometimes it was as simple as, you know, I might meet the head of fixed income in the elevator, and he's like, how are you doing? And I'm like, I'm really excited because I'm working on this project, and we're really getting results, and here's what's interesting, and I thought it was going to be this, but it was that. That's not bragging at all to me, and that felt comfortable. Another way I've seen other people get around maybe some discomfort about sort of demonstrating the work that they're executing is to make a pact with another team member and share with them, hey, this is a development area for me. I'm struggling with it. I need to take a step back. Like, maybe you're not even comfortable doing that. Take a step back, make a pact with someone, and say, I just really need you to talk about my contribution, and I will spend my time talking about your contribution because I feel much more comfortable talking about what you have done, and you feel more comfortable talking about what I have done.
Good idea.
So, and that way, both of our work gets elevated. If you have that relationship and you're comfortable on the team doing something like that, that can really help.
That's a good
Thank
idea.
You, Mimi. Okay. With that, we'll check one last time to see if there are any questions on the phone, and if not, we will wrap up the call. Michael.
All right. Yes, ma'am. Again, if you would like to ask a question via the phone, it's star then one. Again, that is star then one to ask a question.
All right. We'll give it about 10 or 20 seconds, and if no one calls it,
we'll wrap up the call. Actually, ma'am, we do have a question. Okay, it comes from the location of Alice Chang, Coal Bond Rating Agency.
Is anyone there?
Yes, we're here.
Hello. This
hi.
Is Anna, by the way. Just a quick
Anna,
question.
Hi.
Hello. If Elaine can share an example of how you went by the, I guess, the saying, when you drive, blow your horn. If you have any example, that would be great. If not, ignore my question.
I'm just trying to think of one that I am not an attorney, okay? I happen to be a daughter and a sister of attorneys, so there was a lot of legal talk growing up, and my brother went to law school, et cetera. But I'm not an attorney. I did work as a secretary or whatever in a law firm when I was in college, but that doesn't really count. But I've always been interested in the law. And the job I do now, I deal with attorneys frequently. And one thing I'm very comfortable with is New York State local finance law, because that's part of what I do. And there are times when I find things that an attorney misses. And what first of all, I have an attorney in my department who's you know, a peer of mine. He's a senior vice president, banker. He's an attorney, and I was checking with him to make sure I'm right. But I will make sure I tell my boss, who's run the department, and he's, you know, he is the partner or director of the firm. I will make sure. I say, oh, by the way, I found this out, and I checked with the XY attorney, and he thanked me. You know, like, I just, you know, there are times when you're supposed to just make sure your manager knows. And you kind of do it in a way of, like, for the future, watch out, this might happen again, and this is what I found. So I try to be, at this point in my life, you know what, at my age and my level of experience, if someone doesn't like it, just too bad. It's a little different, I think, when you're younger, because sometimes people will take that as being too aggressive. So you have to kind of, like, tone it down with whatever situation you're in. Offhand, I think that's just a rough example. I go through documents all day long, and I do once in a while if it's something stupid like a typo. For instance, if I'm reviewing the final official statement on some deal or a preliminary official statement, it's something dopey like it says notes instead of bonds, I will just either call or email the person that sent it out. However, if I find something that's pretty big that I have a question about, but I kind of know I'm right, I'll send it to the whole working group. And that's another way of blowing your own horn. So the bond council sees it. The the financial advisor sees it, the issuer sees it, the underwriters council sees it, if there are other underwriters, they see it, other bankers. So it's a way of blowing your own horn, you know. So, again, I wouldn't do it for a typo, but if it's something substantial, send it to the whole group and let them know that you found something that maybe wouldn't have been, maybe would have been a problem if you didn't pick it up. So,
thanks, Elaine. At this point, I'd like to thank our participants, Jesselyn Moore, Elaine Brennan, and Nene Jenkins, for sharing their thoughts on their careers. I also want to thank the Northeast Women in Public Finance co-presidents, Kimberly Lyons and Vivian Altman, and a special shout-out to the mentoring committee, Frida Johnson, Anna Yordanoff, sorry, Anna, I messed up your last name there, Alice Chang, and, of course, Elaine and Jesselyn for all their work in putting this call together. And last but not least, I'd like to thank Bonnie Tesler. Bonnie coordinated with Fitch Ratings on getting out our invitations, sending out reminders, and coordinating the list of participants, et cetera, and generally working behind the scenes. I'd also encourage everybody to watch for the Save the Date for our annual 2018 Mentor-Mentee Speed Mentoring Event, which will be held in the spring of 2018. It's a great opportunity to meet accomplished women in the public finance industry who could be your mentor and to make new friends. If you're not a member of the Northeast Women in Public Finance, please go to our website, newpf.memberclicks.net. And if you Google NEWPF, it will come right up, and you can become a member. Thanks for joining us, and have a great rest of the day.
Hello, thank you, ma'am, and to the rest of the panel for your time also. The conference call is now concluded. At this time, you may disconnect your lines. Thank you again, everyone, and have a great day, and take care.